the Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to the show this evening. We've got a very special Wednesday night rugby for you in store after 8 o'clock. We are reuniting Ronan O'Gara and Peter Stringer. We're going to chat to the two lads about their relationship on and off the pitch. That is on the way from 8. In the meantime, 7:30, Dundalk manager Vinnie Perth will join us. And then really good football show for you as well. Yesterday was the anniversary of the Republic of Ireland 1, Wales 0. Not the most memorable of games, but memorable for two reasons maybe. Stephen Ireland's goal, he was then at the peak of his powers. And it was at Croke Park. First time the Republic of Ireland played at Croke Park, over 70,000 at the game. So on the football show, we will talk to Sean Kelly, former GAA president. And then John O'Shea, Chemical Ban, and Kevin Doyle will all join us with their memories of the game and, I suppose, the Steve Staunton era, which was the campaign for Euro 2008, where Ireland finished third, by the way. You remember that campaign as dismal, in part because it was, in so many ways, the 5-2 loss to Cyprus. There was the 2-1 win against San Marino when Stephen Ireland scored the winner at the last minute. The headline in one of the back pages was, Minnows won, Muppets 2. So this was not a popular time for the Republic of Ireland, but they did finish third in a group with the Czech Republic and Germany, and they finished ahead of Slovakia, they finished ahead of Wales, a Welsh team with Giggs and Bellamy and Bale in it, John Toshack their manager. So we'll get their recollections and their memories of the Euro 2008 campaign. And yes, yesterday in 2007, they played Wales at Croker for the first time. We have Richie McCormack on the news round this evening as ever. Hello.
Hey, Joe, you well?
Very well, very well. And Adrian Barry making a star appearance on the news round. We are honoured and blessed.
I don't know what to say to you, Joe. I mean, it's taken a global pandemic to make it happen. I'm delighted to be here.
It's a very nice painting behind you as well.
Thanks very much.
Is that your own work?
I didn't do it myself. It's not actually a painting. It's, I mean, I'm sure this is going to bore the crap out of the listeners and viewers, but it's a photograph on metal that I bought in the south of France that I was very attracted to at the time. Never really thought I'd find a use for it. There's a couple of electrical sockets behind it. It's the only thing I can actually hang up there. So that's what it's doing there.
Where are we at the moment in the Barry residence? Are we in your personal study or your lounge area? Where are we?
Many leather-bound books, Joe. You know we have. In the attic, and there might be a bit of a draw on the Wi-Fi here because one young person downstairs is watching Paw Patrol, his Paw Patrol last bit of a treat before he goes to bed. So that's what's going on downstairs. And it's bottom time. And I'm kind of, it's great to have an excuse for this half hour of the day to be not that involved, Joe. I'm not going to lie to you.
Excellent. Well, you're more than welcome. So look, we've a good show lined up. Vinnie Perth will give us the latest on how the League of Ireland are coping with the current situation. Then we are reuniting Stringer and O'Gara, one of the great partnerships. And then on the football show, we'll talk about the Stan era and the games at Croke Park, I suppose, as well, with Kevin Doyle, John O'Shea and Chemical Ban. I was surprised to see Ireland finish third in that group. You just remember the Stan era as really tough, dreadful.
It was.
You know, just an air of doom and gloom about the whole thing, right from the off. Bobby Robson's health, unfortunately, and very sadly, deteriorated. There was the Stephen Ireland granny situation. There was Stan looking a little bit out of his depth, certainly in interviews. I don't know what he was doing on the training pitch, to be fair. And then the 5-2 Cyprus, all of that stuff. But they feel, you know, it actually isn't disastrous on paper, Adrian, when you look at it. But the air of doom, as I said, lingers in the memory.
Do you remember covering a lot of games around that time? It was awful. The standard of football was so pathetic. It's very difficult to make any kind of a case for. I actually wonder, just listen to that, and I am a bit surprised. I can get the surprise in your voice as well that actually that's where we finished in the group. Mm. I wonder if there's a paper over the cracks a little bit. Like, I do remember going to press conferences around that time. Bobby Robson been put forward as a, I don't know what at that time. It was all grim. Like, it all felt quite inevitable from very early on, and Stan clearly was lacking in the charisma to be able to. I think there's so many managers that exist out there, Joe, that can carry off the job adequately and get by, and many of them have created careers out of it, be absolutely fine about it, because they've got some sort of a modicum of charisma when it comes to dealing with people and dealing with the press, which just seemed to be absent. I think was probably one of the key factors when you boil it down with Stan.
Yeah, he was unprepared. The interview that lingers longest in my memory, Richie, is the one where he was asked what went wrong, and he said, "You tell me." and it was just, you know, not quite the right approach, and terribly sad because in his final game, the Cyprus draw in Croke Park, a 1-1 draw where Cyprus outplayed Ireland and Steve Finnan scored a late equaliser, not celebrated by any of the players, really. There were boos at full time. That was how the Staunton era was signed off on.
There were people coming down out of the stands trying to make their way towards the pitch during certain points of that game, if I remember rightly. I remember looking over towards the Canale and Cusick stand, where there were definitely people trying to make a point and trying to make sure that Stan wasn't there by the time the next game rolled around. I can't remember if it was that game or one of the games prior where poor Bobby Robson was wheeled into a press conference essentially to try and defend Stan, and his health wasn't there. He was in no fit state to be in that job, and he was put forward, I think it was Gavin Cooney pointed out last night, he was put forward on Liveline at the time to try and take the flak that was being thrown towards Staunton. And it was all round, it was just a really grim situation. And I've pointed out a few times before, one of the worst aspects of all this is that it completely colours the way the Irish public view Stephen Staunton. Because you're talking about a guy who I think was the first to reach 100 caps for his country, who's the only player to, I think, play at 3 World Cups for his country, and to play at pretty much an exceptional standard in English football for more than a decade. And everything is viewed through the prism now of those 18 months or whatever it was in charge of the team, which were admittedly a disaster, but he deserves, from an Irish public's perspective, far more love than I think he's been given in the past couple of years.
I hope that's changing. I sense it probably is with the passage of time, but we'll talk to the lads. Sorry, Adrian. Yeah, shoot.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, Joe. I actually just think he hasn't helped himself in a lot of ways. Like, he should have come out at some point after this all died down and his managerial career. What club did he go on to afterwards? Some two-bit sort of League Two club afterwards, if I remember rightly.
He went to work with Leeds at one point.
Behind the scenes, like, he should have come out at some point and said, geez, that went awfully wrong, and I was way too early in my career. Like, nobody blames him for taking the job. He shouldn't have been offered the job in the first place. Nobody blames him for taking it. He should have come out afterwards at some point and said, geez, that went horribly wrong. I was way out of my depth. What was I doing there? And shown some sort of, I don't know, modesty in the conversation. I think if and when he manages to do that, even at this remove, I think that'll probably help in the public consciousness, because it's the difficulty is he got such the mick taken out of him over everything he was doing. That stuff just lingers, doesn't it?
It does a bit, I suppose. It's actually a decent squad, by the way. You know, just looking back at the Wales game, Shea given in goal, peak of his powers. John O'Shea winning leagues with Manchester United. Paul McShane was coming through. Richard Dunn, probably pretty close to getting to peak of his powers. Steve Finnan. You know, in 2007, he was a Champions League winner, keeping Ian Hart on the bench as well. That's a very, very solid back five. And then you have Stephen Ireland, who really was exceptional at that time. I mean, my lingering memory of that period is we have a superstar here for the next 10 years and a player that we haven't really produced in a long time, you know. Kevin Doyle came off the bench that day. He was injured, but he came off the bench for Stephen Ireland. We had Carsley. We had Kevin Kilbane. I mean, he did his best, let's be honest. We'll talk to him later.
You can't have everything, Joe.
No, you can't. We had Damien Duff, who had been winning leagues with Chelsea, and we had Robbie Keane, who was at the peak of his powers, and then we had Aidan McGeady coming off the bench for Robbie Keane. That was, in hindsight, incredibly strong.
Shane Long was starting to poke his head through at Reading as well. Yeah. I remember he made an appearance over in San Marino. So, yeah, like, it wasn't a bad squad. It was just he wasn't fit to be a manager. And Adrian's point, I'm not, like, I don't know Steve Staunton, the man. I would presume he just doesn't want to talk about this anymore. Like, do you want to talk about the great embarrassing moments of your life with any great regularity, Joe, in front of a public audience?
I feel like you drag me into those conversations at least once a week, as is. It's not pleasant.
You're the man who brought up your Love Island obsession, Joe. That's nothing to do with me.
Nothing to be embarrassed about. So that is on the way between 9 and 10, and then Ronan O'Gara and Peter Stringer after 8. I had presumed they might have known each other a long time. Actually, they met each other literally as kids. They played together from the age of dot, so they know each other incredibly well. 16 years at Munster, 2 Heineken Cups, a senior debut together, the Mick Galway cradling them picture in 2000, Grand Slam. It was Stringer who passed the ball to O'Gara. He had started on the bench. Tomás O'Leary started that game, but ultimately Stringer was there for the key moment. And I just texted the two lads to get a sense of where we might go. Are there any areas you want to explore, you know? And O'Gara said, essentially, I liked him because he gave the ball to me quickly. Which is all O'Gara wants in a nine. Just give me the ball and get out of my way.
So like one of the great Irish sporting partnerships of all time,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
And like it was funny the way, like the one thing that stands out for me with the passage of time was that you always assumed watching that partnership, O'Darcy, O'Driscoll and Darcy probably in the same mold that, geez, these lads, I'd say they're the best of mates. I'd say they're like living in each other's pockets.
Yeah.
And I don't know that was from what you gather, like it's not that they were unfriendly. It just didn't seem like they were necessarily best mates. What a partnership though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was very different people, I suspect. So that is all on the way. It's a very decent show. Vinnie Perth with us 7:30. We'll start the news round, Richie, with more solid news on when the Olympics are going to happen.
Yeah, from Thomas Bach, the rearranged Olympic Games could be staged in the spring of 2021, according to the IOC president. The coronavirus pandemic led to the Games being postponed for the first time in their history. The IOC announced yesterday that they would be staged by next summer at the latest, and Bach says that all options are on the table. He's created a task force to deal with moving Tokyo 2020 to 2021.
We are facing an unprecedented challenge again now because this postponement is the first ever postponement of Olympic Games in Olympic history. And the Olympic Games are the most complex event on this planet. We have to get together 11,000 athletes from 206 National Olympic Committees and the IOC Refugee Olympic Team in one place, not only for doing sport and showing sporting excellence, but also living together in an Olympic village, celebrating humanity together.
Celebrating humanity together, Adrian.
I mean, when it comes to humanity, like, do us a favor. Like, if these lads were that concerned about humanity, we wouldn't have had to wait at least a week, right? Like, yeah, maybe a bit more before these lads really should have pulled the plug on it. Yeah. Like, do you know what the funny thing for me, Joe, is, right? All the conversation that's been had about, like, the postponement / cancellation of the Premier League, the GAA Championships, all the other, the Heineken Cup, Six Nations, like, all those other major sports. The Olympics is just another step up, isn't it? Like, it's the one thing that will be, I think, as a viewing experience, as a TV viewing experience, I could probably live with having watched a bit of the Australian A-League, which was still bizarrely, I'm not sure if it still is, but was bizarrely anyway, last Friday morning, still going ahead. Like, it looked weird, but was happy enough to sit down and watch it. I think the Olympics would be just weird without fans at it.
No, I don't think you could do it. It would defeat the whole purpose in many respects. I haven't even checked. I just presume, so they're not going to do some business with the French Games of 2024, where that's pushed back a year. We'll just have a 3-year cycle.
I think that's still under review. There was a couple of pieces up on L'Équipe today where they were asking what is the possible ramifications for the move to 2021 of France 2024. And ultimately, I think their main concern is just get these done first, and then we'll discuss what's going to happen with Paris. But I think they'll stick to the calendar as has been set forward for the last God knows how many years.
Because when they postponed the Ryder Cup in 2001 after September 11th and it went to 2002, they just it's now in even years. But I presume like the Olympics is just too big a thing if you're the French government and you've spent all this money and all the planning has gone into it. It's not so easy to say, by the way, kick that down the line a year.
Yeah, and similarly for Los Angeles and similarly for the winter hosts of the next while and the people who have money invested in these things as well. There was a note up today about how much this is going to cost NBC. God love them, but they've ploughed $7.5 billion to cover the games up until 2032. So it's a massive loss for them and TV rights holders around the world.
The NBC thing is insane. Ryle Nugent, Adrian, was on the paper review. Did you hear it?
I did.
Oh, well, then you know the answer. Okay.
Ah, shit. I'll tell you about
language.
4,000.
So he was saying NBC obviously spent about $4 billion per Olympic Games. RTE at, I think, Beijing was his last Olympics in charge at RTE, brought 400 staff, I think. Or was it, sorry.
RTE got 40, wasn't
40.
It?
40, RTE 40, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it BBC 400 or 4,000?
400, yeah.
Okay.
400, yeah.
And NBC 4,000.
Yeah.
Turns out I didn't even know enough to ask the question, but I'm glad you were able to pick that up. Yeah, 4,000 staff, NBC brings to an Olympic Games.
Yes. Incredible. Their own Starbucks, I remember making the point.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, like, like in terms of cycle, it would make no sense to not do a 3-year cycle. Like, you don't actually need 4 years to prepare for an Olympics.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, it just occurred to me there. I presume they aren't moving. They aren't moving France 2024. So horse racing.
Yeah, before we get to that, actually, a note from the GA in the last hour, they've instructed all clubs to close their facilities immediately. It follows the government guidelines issued yesterday regarding the pandemic. All pitches, walkways and gathering areas around clubs are to be closed up to the new date of April 19th. They've also asked to refrain from undertaking new capital projects while support funding for that type of work is suspended. As you mentioned, Horse Racing Ireland are making their facilities available to the HSE during the COVID-19 pandemic. Racing had been continuing behind closed doors up until yesterday. The HSE began preparations yesterday as well to use Mallow Racecourse as a test centre, and the HRI say they'll identify other personnel and infrastructure that may be useful. The shutting down of all racing here has forced the Racing Post to cease publication for the time being. The racing paper has been in circulation since 1986, and editor Tom Kerr says the paper will return when racing returns, but in the meantime they'll maintain an online presence.
Okay. Tommy Fleetwood's been talking.
Yeah, he's called for this year's Ryder Cup to be postponed. The contest involving Europe and the USA is scheduled to take place at Whistling Straits in September. European captain Padraig Harrington told Off the Ball last week the plans remain in place for the tournament to go ahead as planned. But the world number 10 Fleetwood Fields qualification has already been disrupted unfairly due to the postponement of the first two majors of the year.
Yeah, it's just going to be inevitable, you suspect. I mean, that, being a Ryder Cup captain for 2 years is a long old stint. I mean, 3 years of being a Ryder Cup captain is too much for any person.
What did he say? Did he say that golf had been interrupted unfairly?
The qualification process had been interrupted unfairly. So essentially, it would be skewed by the fact that you don't have two majors to use as your qualification posts.
Mm. The alternative is they could just say you both pick your 12 players.
Yeah, that's the ideal way of doing it.
In which case, we can have Gray McDowell, Peter Lawrie, Damien McGrain, Rory McIlroy, Padraig Harrington playing captain. Go all out.
They could. Go on, Joe, say it.
All right. Just put me in there. Last man out when the job's already done. I guess that's the only way they could do it, but certainly otherwise the disqualification period is too messy. Though Harrington was saying last week on the show he would be up for doing it behind closed doors, as in if the choice was, well, you can do it now behind closed doors in September, or, you know, the public health officials say to him, come April, May, June of 2021, you can do the Ryder Cup as usual, full shebang, in front of everybody there, and then, you know, the usual Ryder Cup. He said he'd go with September as planned, but behind closed doors, because, well, people are desperate for something, and why not, you know? In two minds, I got to say. The Ryder Cup, without all the fanfare and all the pageantry and all the crowd, more so than pretty much any other golf tournament, is definitely missing something pretty integral.
Yeah, I agree with Harrington. I have to say, I think that, like, if it's an option, not doing it, or just, like, everybody accepts it's a far better thing, as all sport is, with an arena packed full of manic fans. No question about it. But, like, at the same time, it's really only for me a question of whether, like, in September, will it be safe at that time for whatever number of 100 or maybe 1,000 people it'll take to put this thing on without fans? Like, is that safe? And if it is, go for it. Like, Jesus, we could all be in, we could be, the Ryder Cup would suddenly be for, you know, a niche sport, Joe, will suddenly be front and centre for people.
Well, indeed. The lesser spotted Adrian Barry, no less, says Pat. I seem to remember listening to him on Off the Ball on weekends back in the previous millennium. I thought he was too big to appear on a crummy weeknight. Well, we begged, Pat, we begged.
There's so much, I mean, begged slash we're desperate, and that's absolutely fine too. The last, what did you say, the last millennium?
Yeah.
A couple of inaccuracies there, but listen, it sounds like he's just happy to have me here, and I'm going to take that.
Yeah, what he's trying to say is he's thrilled to hear you again. Lads, I just listened to your live stream of O'Shea, Doyle and Killer. Is it a bit sad I'm going to listen to it again at 9 p.m? # lockdown loopy says no. I think it is a bit sad. No, there are other options for sure.
No, listen, this all counts towards the JNLR. No, but by all means, listen in. We're glad to have you along.
Adrian, how are you finding, well, let's not call this lockdown. Leo Varadkar very clear on those on that point yesterday, but # lockdown loopy is what Noel said. How are you finding things?
Day 12 in the Barry household, Joe, and I haven't really wandered very far beyond about 200 meter radius of the house, which, like, if you were to say to have said to me a couple of weeks ago, like, I would have said, well, I'm not really sure I'll be able to do that. So it's been fine. It turns out it's quite difficult. Both myself and my wife work and have two small kids. And it turns out it's very difficult to work and entertain two small kids at the same time. So not really, like, there isn't a spare minute in the day. I'm not really finding the... I thought initially I'd sort of thrown in a request into the WhatsApp group of Football Manager. I thought, all this spare time, what am I going to do with myself? No, it turns out, like, there isn't. I've been trying to go out and do a bit of gardening, Joe. That's, that has been my main departure over the last couple of weeks, mainly because it's actually a good thing to be doing, it turns out. I don't know if that's just where I'm at in my life, but it mainly entertains the hell out of the kids. They just go about sort of playing with the muck and helping out with the digging, and it's been a great distraction.
Oh, well, that sounds like quite a nice, positive thing to do. Is it, do you know anything about gardening? How are you doing this? YouTube?
Not the first thing. Yeah, I've looked up Alan Titchmarsh, and he's guiding my way through the very small, it has to be said, patch of grass that we have. The neighbours have found all this hilarious because I did start digging the... I did start digging the garden, I'd say, maybe about a year ago, Joe, I'd say thereabouts, and... I had great intentions to finish it and just never got around to it. So the neighbours have found all of this stuff hilarious that I'm back out with the fork and the spade and going at it. But it's been, the weather's been so, like, I'm actually not sure. I haven't looked at the weather forecast and I don't know what it's going to be like over the next few weeks. But if it stays like this, I can see myself staying absolutely sane. But if we're still here in 12 weeks' time and it's piddling down, I'm not sure what sort of state I'm going to be in.
Yes, no, it's true. It's quite incongruous at the moment to see everything in bloom and the sunshine and the world seemingly very healthy. You know, it's like everything's coming out and the sun is out, and obviously what's going on is not so good. I'm in two. I can't decide if I wanted to lash rain all day, so that, you know, snuggling up on the couch and watching movies doesn't feel like the wrong thing to do. Because I found today, even working around the house but looking out at the blue skies, it was like back to studying for your Leaving Cert in May, and it just felt all wrong to me. I wouldn't be averse to a bit of rain.
Even little things today, like being able to leave the back door open, just made all the difference. It just makes everything feel bigger and lighter, and kind of takes the weight off your shoulders a little bit, being able to get out into the garden. It's just, it's a world of difference. If it was piddling down between now and God knows when, I think we'd all probably lose the run of ourselves and lose our marbles.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Yeah.
So London Irish then have followed a couple of Premiership clubs.
Yeah, more than a couple. They're due to implement a 25% pay cut, and it'll come into effect from April 1st. Former Ireland head coach Declan Kidney and ex-internationals Sean O'Brien and Paddy Jackson are among those affected. The exiles joined Northampton, Sale, Worcester, Wasps, Saracens, Gloucester, Harlequins and Leicester in taking similar action. Meanwhile, the RFU have announced a £7 million rescue package for community clubs in England. The PFA are seeking an urgent meeting with Premier League and Football League clubs. They wish to discuss the financial impact of the coronavirus crisis on clubs and its own members. Championship side Birmingham City have implemented wage deferrals beginning from next month. Other clubs are set to follow suit. The PFA say several clubs have approached players regarding wage deferrals.
Brighton, Bournemouth.
Yeah, Dave, Brighton have ring-fenced anyway a minimum of 1,000 match tickets for medical staff on the front line in the fight against COVID-19. The Premier League clubs reserving the tickets either for one specific match or spread across a number of games when football actually resumes. They begin a club-to-club relay with the gesture. They nominated Bournemouth, who have also committed 1,000 tickets to medical staff. Sticking with nice gestures, Roger Federer and his wife have donated £1 million Swiss francs for the most vulnerable families in Switzerland. The 20-time Grand Slam champions country has imposed a ban on all private and public events and has closed all non-essential businesses until at least the 19th of April because of the coronavirus. And in the last hour as well, the All England Club have announced they'll hold an emergency main board meeting next week to discuss the fate of this summer's Wimbledon Tennis Championships. They're considering either postponing or cancelling the event, but they say playing behind closed doors is off the table.
Okay, and Watford are getting in on the altruism?
Yeah, Watford have offered the use of Vicarage Road to help the NHS fight against the coronavirus pandemic. Their ground is next to the town's hospital, and Chairman Scott Duxbury said the Premier League club would do whatever it takes to support their health service. West Hertfordshire Hospital's NHS Trust said it is very, very grateful.
There are lots of lovely things happening. I mean, in the midst of it, Adrian, and I just can't believe this is a thing. It is stunning that there's these kids going around coughing in people's faces. Even Simon Harris said today that some kids coughed in his face. I suspect they didn't know he was the Minister for Health. Maybe they did. But there are lovely things going on, and then some just
weird,
mad things going on as well. In the main, with those notable exceptions, I look around and I have to say I see the general community that I can observe around me operating in you know, incredibly well, but real, you know, in good faith all the way through.
Definitely. Dave McIntyre, actually, we recorded an episode of Dadcast yesterday. I don't know if it's gone live yet or not, but Dave McIntyre was talking about the exact same thing happening to him where, this woman in her 20s threatened to cough twice at him and his kids. Just the most bizarre stuff possible. And who knows what the rationale behind that is. But there are some, like, the country is going to go through the ringer in the deepest, most traumatic possible way, I would think, over the coming weeks and months. And it's difficult to be talking about positives at this juncture when you know the juggernaut is coming down the track. But I've definitely found small bits, Joe, I have to say. There's been, like, I mentioned the neighbours earlier on, like, I found myself on the very short walks that we go for during the day to kind of clear the head a small bit, that you're connecting with people on a far deeper level now. Mm. You know, when people say, how are you getting on? And the typical Irish thing, and maybe just a typical human trait before that, would have been, yeah, I'm grand, I'm fine, yeah, nothing like that. You wouldn't have been given too much on it. Whereas now people are like, yeah, struggling there a few days ago, but feeling a bit better now. And there's a real honesty, I feel, about conversation now. And whether that maintains itself when this storm has, the clouds have lifted at God knows what point towards the end of the year, we shall see. But definitely I found that a real positive, that level of connection with people.
I mean, it probably won't maintain to the same extent once we're through the back end of it, but right now there's an immense sense of shared experience across the country, which, and it's a traumatic one as well, so that can be bonding. But anyway, last couple of stories. Jake White has joined the Bulls.
Yeah, he's been named the new director of rugby at the Super Rugby Club. He succeeds Alan Zondag, who stepped down from the role earlier this year. Before coronavirus shut down this season, Super Rugby season, the Bulls had lost 5 of the first 6 games. His appointment hasn't been met entirely warmly in South Africa, with former box hooker James Dalton saying White is likely to clash with the international director of rugby, Razzie Erasmus, and that only 6 or so of his World Cup winning squad of 2007 still want anything to do with him. Meanwhile, Sheffield United defender Chris Basham says being in lockdown isn't stopping their fitness training. There's no Premier League football until at least April 30th, but Basham says the whole Blade squad are still doing vital work despite not being with their teammates and their coaches, and they haven't lost sight of their European qualification ambitions.
Obviously getting the 10 games done this season coming to a close, but there's so much exciting football still to be played. We're trying to fight for a European spot where we want to go on the best journey we can with Sheffield United, and just having that feeling of walking back out in front of fans and playing football in the Premier League again, something that I'm really looking forward to. Just obviously, we need to help out as much as we can with the NHS. We need to stay indoors, and when the football season and we can start entertaining again, that'll be our chance to entertain. But at the minute, let's just all be together as one and stay inside, and let's help the NHS and everybody that needs help.
So that is your news round pretty much done for this evening. Adrian Barry, do you want to give us your isolation recommendations? What is getting you through the evenings?
Thought you might ask me that, Joe. The gardening, obviously, is the thing that has me all tuckered out of an evening, Joe. So that's the first thing. You'll love this one.
Here we go.
I'm not sure, like, are you allowed to order books online, or are you allowed to get stuff delivered? I don't even know. I mean, anything that arrives... Yeah. Are you? I don't think that writes here. I'm getting the debt all wiped out and I'm absolutely stuck into it.
I think that's the way to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything by Michael Harding, Joe. I'm in the middle of chest pains at the minute, which, fittingly enough for the times that are in it, was in relation to his own brush with mortality last year. Just, it's incredible stuff. Like, I find that you can read a page and then stare at the wall for about a half an hour afterwards, just letting it all sink in. A wonderful writer. Even if you don't want to go and buy his books, there's plenty of his writing online as well, so you can go and check it out. And that's my isolation recommendation, Joe.
Well, I'm very impressed. And have you read Staring at Lakes?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I think that might have been my introduction to him. Or maybe it was his columns in the Irish Times.
Yeah.
And then his the elephant. What was it called? The book about his mom passing.
Yeah.
The elephant in the room. It might have been just incredible books. I just like, there's just so much wisdom that pours out of it, and it feels like it's something that sits very lightly on him as well. So yeah.
I knew you were a man of depth, Adrian, despite your best efforts to pretend otherwise. I knew it.
We both know you're not being truthful there, but I presume you'll be a Michael Harding man.
Oh, yeah. I went with the family to see him last summer in Dunleary, the Pavilion, whatever the theatre there is in Dunleary. So he just comes on stage and he just talks for an hour, hour and a half. And God, it was a bit like a similar experience to the books. You come away with a few things to think about.
You want to go and smoke a pipe and put the slippers on for a while, is what you're saying.
A slower pace of life, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Listen, that's what Joe wants anyway.
Thanks so much, Adrian Barry, for making time, for dodging, looking after your children this evening to come on the News Rant. We appreciate
Hopefully
it.
They're asleep. Hopefully Paw Patrol is over, Joe, and they're asleep now.
Yeah, and Richie McCormack, as ever. Thanks, Richie.
Over and out.
That is your News Rant for this evening. Between 9 and 10, Kevin Kilbane, Kevin Doyle, John O'Shea, and up after 8 o'clock, Ronan O'Gara and Peter Stringer. And up next, in the meantime, we have the Dundalk manager, Vinnie Perth, with us.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.